and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit. Podcasts are two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Isle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of too many podcasts. With me, Tweaker, two amazing people who are.
I'm Erin M. Evans. I write fantasy novels and best known for The Books of the Usurper and the Brimstone Angels Saga.
It is I, B. Dave Walters, friends to the statistical majority of all mankind.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, right.
And I maintain the good ones.
That's yes. True. Clearly.
And a constant threat to the others.
Indeed.
I love it.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it if we're being honest. Yeah.
I just want to say, hey, I'm once again to the point. I did the intro without looking at anything. I can do it again. I'm not stumbling over. Ha ha.
So, well, now you jinxed it. Like, you're foobar pretty much for the. You
know. I won't remember I said this next week. We're going to kick things off with some questions from our Discord, because we have that now, and I thought that'd be fun to do. I posted in there earlier today and said, hey, you got any questions? We're recording tonight, and people posted questions. So we're going to go through a couple of those, and then we're going to do some of the email ones as well, which I'm going to send Erin because I forgot to do that earlier. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to roll. I have them in front of me. I'm going to roll a die. I'm going to see which one we're going to do.
Fun.
Let's see. Okay. This is from Painted Orchid. I'd love to suggest theme. One, what do you consider to count as theme? Parentheses, is goes on an adventure to find a princess a theme, or does it have to be a deeper meaning? And also, two, how do you find your novel's theme? I kind of hope it would just fall out of my novel after I finished my first draft, but now I'm on draft two and I still don't quite know what it is.
I love that you said, is it this? And B-Dave and I both started shaking.
Yeah, it's true. We did both vigorously start shaking. No.
Do you want this one?
No, that's all yours. You know, my rant is well worn here, so I'll let you have it.
The theme is not about what happens. It's what the story is about. So it's not, we go on an adventure to save a princess. It's kind of, what is the meaning behind that action? I've heard people say a good construction is sort of X leads to Y. Facing the unknown leads to a better understanding of yourself. That's kind of a squishy theme, but it's there. It might be a concept that all of your character arcs and your plot kind of touch on and revolve around. It might be elements that kind of pull together all of those threads, but it's going to be something that's not. I'm having a flashback to an annoying conversation I had once. I'm outside. I feel like I'm outside the realm of anybody who cares about this because most of them don't work there. There was a time I participated in a story summit for Wizards of the Coast. And so we spent the day talking about sort of what are the books we are pitching and what thematically tied them together. Unfortunately, the theme that tied them together was duty, which was everybody was giggling about just like that.
Duty.
But yeah, so like Fire in the Blood, and I honestly don't remember all the books that came, all the titles of the books that were coming out that for that set. And then when we discussed this, we brought this to the RPG side, they were like, we were thinking like beholders or giants. Like they wanted a theme, like what is the sort of iconic element that brings all these things together. And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the theme of a novel or the theme of a movie. That's more of the theme of a set of products.
Yeah.
And it is an important sort of distinction, right? A party theme is one thing. a book theme is another. And as somebody who writes in series, there is also the case of a series can have a theme which works with the individual themes of the book. And how do you find it? Okay, so I am somebody who does not start with theme. I am somebody for whom a theme comes out as the story comes together. And often I have to look at that that first draft to spot it. And sometimes I need someone else to look at that first draft to spot it. But I find theme is the thing that helps you pull together and organize revision too. Because if you know, for example, that your theme is about, you've written a book about the strengths of vulnerability, let's say. That's a kind of a theme that's applicable to a lot of characters, which is nice when you have multi point of view, because then you actually have like a bunch of sort of sub themes. But you can sort of make all those characters say something about that, right? Where it is, where somebody is already very comfortable being vulnerable and they have to sort of learn how to apply it, or somebody who has avoided it for their whole life and now they must deal with it and it's hard. That finding different ways to say something on the same kind of topic helps organize the theme of your book, in my opinion.
Yes, to all of that, of course. I knew that Aaron would sum it up both more diplomatically and succinctly than when I rant about this. Although I feel like I'm nice about theme.
You're nice about theme.
It's not a hill to die on. I also have to say, Aaron, I was gonna say, literally, I was going back and forth in my mind because I was gonna be like, "Your beauty is exceeded only by your brilliance," and then I'm like, "Wait, is that insulting? Well, your brilliance is ins treated by your beauty." And then I'm like, wait, am I calling you dumb? Wait, I don't really.
Like, are you so what? Are you calling me dumb or are you calling me ugly? Which one?
I'm sleeping on the couch
Is
tonight.
this inappropriate?
This episode's theme is how does one man put his foot in his mouth?
It's impressive when it's 6 feet 9 inches away.
That's true. So that's a long range foot. For me, I do know the theme in advance, but it's like every other element of the outline in that it's what I think it is, but I reserve the right to have it change, or for it to it for the story to reveal to me that it has changed. That I'm like, oh, I thought this was about this, but it's really about this, you know? And I agree that the theme doesn't always have to be some like fluffy thing or even like this incredibly grandiose thing because, the hero's journey. Ooh, I'm gonna grossly oversimplify this.
I'm sure no one has overdone that with the hero's journey.
It's a framework because, again, the kid from nowhere who is secretly the chosen one who, gets trained to rise up to save the world is the Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and Star Wars and The Matrix. And all of those movies are about different things. That a guy shoots another guy in the face is what happens. The guy who shot the guy who shot his father is a revenge story. The guy who shot his brother because he was jealous of him is Cain and Abel, one of the oldest stories in the world. The guy that shot the other guy because the dead guy knew that he was going to turn into a werewolf at midnight and needed his friend to stop him first, is yet a different thing. So the act of a guy shoots another guy, that in and of itself is not that in no way is indicative of what the story is about. Does that make sense? So yeah, I mean, I'm spinning in circles, but again, it's not what happens, it's what it's about. And I would say, so the book that I've been heralding, actually it's not in here, it's by my bedside because I've been rereading it. You're gonna need a bigger story. Is one of the things he talks about is the very first thing you need to decide. Again, another gross oversimplification is the statement that you're trying to make and what you're trying to say about the world, because that will inform not just this story, but subsequent stories. Like, The Lord of the Rings is about how the tiniest force for good can oppose overwhelming evil and win. The tiniest light in the dark still drives back the darkness. It's what the Lord of the Rings is about, right? If there were a sequel where Frodo comes back from, having sailed into the West and comes back and is like, new plan, I'm here for the bitches. You're like, what?
I now desperately need that SNL skit with Elijah Wood in it.
Right. You know, he's like, I'm done with the one ring. Now I'm getting laid, you know?
Sam over there, neglected.
That's right, man. Oh, a lot of lingering glances. I was telling them before we recorded here that apparently Sean Astin just starred in a movie that I sold a couple of years ago. And I'm like, I would have put way more lingering, vaguely homoerotic glances in the script had I known that's the way we were going, you know. But I think your theme, pending who your characters are, obviously we don't know anything about the story, so it's harder to say. But you take a character like Superman, a alien god who chooses to dwell among the people and protect them and feels the need to keep that a secret. That lends itself to certain themes in and of itself, like duty, sacrifice, heroism. And
I was being so good.
No, you did it to me, you do it to him. Those are the rules.
Duty. you can dig deeper even under that. Remember Kill Bill's whole Bill's rant about Superman and how Clark Kent is Superman's judgment of us because he's bumbling and stupid and weak, and that's what Superman really thinks we are. You know, that was the best part of those two movies, to tell you the truth. But so you can dig and dig and dig and dig and dig. So you don't necessarily have to stop at revenge, or if you're seeking revenge, dig two graves, or you will become the monster that you try to slay, but maybe that monster still needs slaying. You know what I mean? Like, you can keep digging to make it something special that will resonate. Whereas the last thing I will say, so that I don't soak up all the oxygen just about this, you look at something like Get Out, where you can be like, you did some massively heinous stuff, and I'm 1,000% behind you the entire time. To the point that I will not spoil the movie, and please don't to anybody else who hasn't seen it. But by the end, when you see cop lights at the end, you're like, oh no. Oh no.
Yeah.
So.
God, I love that movie.
Oh, so great.
I honestly don't think I have anything to add to this, because you both summed it up pretty well.
I think BDA makes a good point too, that digging down, I think, becomes more important sort of the closer you get to a specific viewpoint, that you are saying something and thinking about what you are saying with this character's story and decisions, whether it's like your personal, you know, viewpoint or what the actions say about the story is kind of irrelevant, right? It's what the character does, what is the sort of meaning behind it. The more specific that can get, I think the more, you know, the tighter and perhaps more like effective your theme can be.
Yep. I mean, even though we're not talking about heroism here, the example that I always give, again, heroism, the measure of heroism is sacrifice. And if a person at the restaurant starts choking and I run over and perform CPR, but more to that, the hero has to act and not be acted upon. The hero must choose to do a thing and not be pushed into doing the thing. So if a person's choking at a restaurant and I run and I give CPR, that's a heroic act. If they start choking and Aaron looks at me and says, hey, go give that guy the Heimlich, you're big enough, and I go, oh, okay, it's no longer heroic, even though the exact action is the same. So
shout out to my former coworker Maribel, who was the person that did that. So
there you go. Glad you're still here.
I didn't know what was happening. I just suddenly saw my Maribel just like hoofing it across the restaurant, and she gave this woman the Heimlich, saved her life.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I had that happen at the castle. Somebody started choking at the table next to me. The sound that a person makes when they're actually choking to death is
terrifying.
Very terrifying. And by the time we'd like keyed in on what was happening, the people at the table were already like there trying to help him. But yeah, it was wild.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's do one more from Discord, and then we'll get to the email questions. All right. So we're going to roll. This is from Matt. Matt says, I'm writing a dystopian sci-fi story. My question is about pacing. The first 20 chapters or so encompass a single day, while the rest of it, while the rest have time skips in between to keep the story moving. As long as action keeps moving along in those first 20 chapters, is it okay to have that level of pacing, or do you suggest I speed things up and kill my darlings a bit?
I'm going to say, you have an answer. You go.
I was going to say is time is whatever you want in your book. As long as the story is paced well, you're good. You can have that take up as much time in world as you want. I couldn't think of specific books, but I know I have read stuff like this where there is like a long stretch of like this has like an hour and then the rest of it goes on like, you know, jumping days and weeks and months and stuff like that. But that is my opinion.
Yeah, I think the main thing is like your pacing is going to be determined by the speed at which sort of the action happens. Mm-hmm. Do each of these scenes create a beat? Does something change because that happened?
Yeah.
How drastic is the change? Like these are the things that sort of determine the pace of the story and writing style and other like finer detailed things. But we're going to assume that, you know, that this is all, that part's all sorted and that, you know, you need 20 chapters to get through this first day because so much is happening. And so that would be my main thing. If you need 20 chapters, and obviously sometimes in a book, you're going to have chapters that have more like, here is the setup and the status quo. Obviously we want to keep those for most genres, you want to keep those fairly tight. But if most of those scenes are kind of fillers, then it slows it down. Right. And so that's the question. Do you need 20 chapters to get through the events of a day? Okay. That's fine. That's probably not going to do anything to your pacing because the reader is not going, wait a second, this has only been 15 minutes.
Yeah.
If they notice it at all, they're going to be like, holy shit, it's only been 15 minutes.
Yeah.
70 years of Marvel Comics have been roughly 18 years of time in world. Because, no, not even eight. Yeah, about 18. I guess Spider-Man's about 30 now. Peter Parker went from a high school kid to a grad student. Yeah. And at one point it was literally 3 years. Decades of comic books into the 90s had been 3 years. But now, we'll call it 15 to 18. So a wibbly wobbly timeline in and of itself is not a problem. Also, nowhere is it written that, you know, each page has to equal a day or whatever.
Yeah.
I would pay more attention, especially me with my adherence to the beat structure that I like. Are the emotional notes paced properly? Is your rising and falling action in the right place? Is your act one, act two, act three in the right order? And then if circumstances require you to jump at some point, well, you know, that's all right. I remember the worst jump I've ever seen was between... is it season one and season two or season... No, between season two and season three of Battlestar Galactica. Oh, you haven't?
Mm. It's okay.
Tell you what happens.
No, it's fine.
Well, it's so clunky and weird in the execution that I literally thought, well, this is a Cylon trick and somebody's going to wake up and they're in like a holiday.
I will say I do admire that show just for the fact that how many things people were able to go like, this seems like a weird thing. It's probably Cylons.
Fucking Cylons, bro.
Fucking Cylons.
Now, I will say the time jump has one of the greatest payoffs in television history. Like, something good comes out of it, but it's like, I don't know. Like, imagine if the next time that we record, I show up in like a 400-pound fat suit and you're like, bro, what? And I'm like, this is me. This is who I am now. And you're like, you're messing with me. And it's like, I assure you I'm not. And then I'm not. You know? And it's just like, okay. All right. You know? So yeah, I think as long as your greater structure and pacing is in place, then you know how it breaks down to the hour or to the minute doesn't really matter.
By the way, I Googled it. 10 to 15 years on Earth 616 for Marvel. Wild.
That's about right. Yeah, it was Spider-Man from high school to being a grad student, you know?
Wild.
Whereas in DC, Bruce Wayne is perpetually 30.
Yeah.
It's like they've given them kids now, so they sort of made time
Yeah.
pass. But, you know, Damian was now born, I don't know, when must have been born when Bruce was like 18. He like, you know, got with Talia pretty early.
All right. Well, how about we hop over to some email questions? I don't want to say before that, thank you everybody in the Discord for writing in with questions. If we didn't answer yours, hold on to them. I will continually ask in the Discord for questions. So if you're not in the Discord yet, there is a link in the description below for you to go join it because it's been a lot of fun talking with people in there and seeing them interact and everything. So.
Why don't you like fun?
All right, shall I read these?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. All right, from Vancouver, Washington, three cheers to the Tangentier Triumvirate. Thank you for
Love
sending us loyal listeners on the NaNoWriMo quest. You all implied it would expand my writing comfort zone, which it did, but it was really uncomfortable expanding said zone. Fortunately, I work in sales and run marathons, so embracing the suck is one of my core competencies.
it.
My
Already
question.
like this person.
Due to NaNoWriMo, I now have a completed rough draft novel. As per your October 4th episode title, I am excited about poop. What do you recommend I do with this poop now? Context. My two-book fantasy project, working title, Choices and Consequences, is a hobby that I've been slowly writing for the last few years. There are four main POV characters: male dwarf, female half-elf, male human bard, and female dwarf. The story is about identity and how individuals struggle to fit in. The story opens on the young dwarf's wedding day. Things do not go according to plan. Adventures ensue, forcing the characters to make choices and experience the consequences of their actions. Current draft is about 130,000 words, including NaNoWriMo's
Nice.
50,000. Please keep writing and
Hey.
podcasting. All the best, Jim. Okay. What are
I'm
you
gonna
doing
let
with
y'all
a
explain what to
rough
do with the
draft?
poop since that was y'all's title decision.
First of all, how dare you imply you were somehow objected to that at the
I
time?
vividly remember sitting there the next morning with the podcast page going like, if I don't name it this, I'm gonna get shit from everyone.
And you would have.
I would have.
My
So what do you
turn.
do with poop?
Let me start first because you have su substantially more accolades in this area, so your response will be a much stronger weight than mine. I would say it depends on what you want to do. I mean, presumably you're looking at trying to get it published. Otherwise, you would just say I wrote the book and huzzah. In which case, you have two branching paths to which I personally think is one path. And that is self-publishing or mainstream publication. And in general, I advise everyone to seek mainstream publication, which is not easy and completely random and arbitrary and fickle as fuck.
Yup.
But
Facts.
you
I mean,
always
unless
have
they pick me, then it was all about the talent.
it. True, of course, obviously. Yeah, complete out. Yeah, right.
No, it's so
Clearly.
fickle.
Yeah. It can be fickle even when it breaks your way. And then just know you have in your back pocket the possibility of self-publishing. So it's not that this work will go to waste, although no work ever goes to waste. So understanding that, I think you've got one of two major routes you can go down. Of the two routes that are one, it subdivides again into two more, which is trying to rewrite and edit it yourself or contracting a professional right out of the gates. Which professional editing is not that expensive. The problem is you don't know if the editor is legit or not, which could be a crapshoot in and of itself. So make sure you save an original draft, you
Heard some
know,
horror
of
stories.
your stuff. I've both heard and lived editing horror stories, and then continue to polish. I am of the opinion, and you know, we've been through this, that, you know, me personally, I'm like, you shouldn't have take more than two or three swipes at it before you start sending it out to people because they're probably going to want rewrites anyway. It is very possible to oversharpen your sword. I'm intentionally not making eye contact with Trevor right now. And then just try and dance the query letter dance and see if you can make something happen. That is it, grossly oversimplified, and now I hand it to Aaron of the Thousand
Okay.
Evans.
So ideally, you're going to take this poop and you're going to use like compost to grow a beautiful flower. You have the rough shape of a book here. You have a lot of great pieces that I'm sure you will stick with, but you need to hone it, right? So what I would do is if either there's sort of two ways you can go about it. There's again my preferred way and the other way. I would get some other eyes on it. I would find some people you can swap manuscripts with, or you could there are people who will beta read for you. Again, it's sort of like as a professional thing, or what's it called? Readsy is full of editors and beta readers and such. So you can do this sort of thing. I generally advise finding something along the lines of a critique group or crit partners, because you can get more people and it won't cost you money. It will cost you time because you will need to read their stuff too, which is good for you anyway. But get some feedback, get an idea of what's going on, figure out what your theme is, for example, and get a sense of what you need to do to make this story work. You can go back and listen to our episodes on giving critiques and getting critiques, for specifics about sort of how to approach this, because people are going to tell you things, and some of them are going to be solid points, and some of them are going to be, here's how I would have done it if I were you, and some of them are going to be, I have feelings. And they all kind of need to be weighted differently. Once you've got, let's say though, that you've gotten some good feedback and you have a sense of like, okay, here are the things I need to do. What I do at this point is make a revision outline. Go down and sort of write down what do you need to do with each scene, right? Because there will be things where people are like, this is perfect, don't touch it. And so you can just write like, leave as is, polish to match. And there are scenes where you're like, throw this away, replace with this kind of thing. Or the events are fine, the headspace is wrong. The headspace is fine, the events are confusing. And you'll just say, here's what I'm going to write instead. And so now you have a plan. And then what I would do is go through and execute that plan. And after that, get another round of reads. And B-Dave's right, you can definitely get into a loop with this, where you rewrite and rewrite and rewrite a project, trying to hone it into something that it's just not turning into. And so, if you feel drawn to write something else, I think that's not a bad thing to follow. I think while people are reading this, it would be good to start noodling on another project. There is no project so sacred and perfect that it can't sort of share space with another one. So having something else going on is a good idea, because what you don't want to do is to like hang all your hopes on this thing, especially when it's like your first book, especially when it's a book like, I don't know. I've met people where it's like, I started writing this book when I was 16 and it's my passion project and it's been 10 years and I think I'm finally done and I need to edit it. And I'm like, okay, chances are excellent. You've grown so much as a writer since you came up with this that you're not going to be able to like knock it into shape, because it's got some ideas in it that are very immature, but you are still in love with. And so if it turns into this sort of space and you don't have something else cooking that you're going to fall in love with, you might get into that trap of like, I'm just going to keep trying to make it into the thing I want it to be. So that's my advice. Get some beta readers, make a revision outline, follow the outline, and while people are reading it, start thinking about the next thing.
I want just a bit of clarity there. When you say the next thing, because this person says that they have that, that's a two book thing. Are you saying a completely different
Something
project?
totally different. You
Okay,
need
there
a
we go.
cheat book. What you need is a cheat book. This might be the book you're married to. You need one on the side. And that is fully because, right? Like, let's assume everything goes right here. right? Let's assume everything goes right. You publish this book, you sell it to a big five publisher, you get it published, you write the sequel. They're going to say, what's next? And so if you've been, you know, kind of messing around on the side with this other book, you can say, oh, I have this. And that's great. Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it's a good thing to sort of like just stretch your
yeah.
creative muscles, because it's not the same thing. And if it turns out that it doesn't go well, you're not sort of stuck on this project. You can continue with the next thing. And I feel like this is a jump that people sometimes have a hard time making, which is that your first book is not the only book.
Yeah.
It is not the only book if everything goes perfectly right. And it is not the only book if things fall apart. You will have more books than you. Go ahead and start pulling them out.
Yeah. Don't do the mistake that I did, because I asked that knowing the answer, because I fell into that trap many times where I was like, oh, I finished this one. I'm going to, while I put this aside for a few months, I'm going to think about the next one. No, you just work on.
I will be perfectly honest. If the next book is the thing that has like inflamed your mind and you're like, I have to write this, you should follow that. That should be the thing you follow. But start thinking about other things now, like, because you don't, again, you don't want to get stuck in that. And I would even say, like, if you can pull yourself away from the sequel of your dreams into the option book of your dreams, let's say, that is a wise choice, especially for folks who are kind of dreaming about the 8-book series that they would love to be able to write, because that's hard to manifest.
Yeah.
Yes to all of this, with one very minor caveat, because never ever would I disagree with Aaron. If that second book is just burning a hole in your brain, you know, like you're like, I've just got to. Like, I mean, they call to me, you know, this is the only thing I can think about. Sure, get it out of your head, get it down on paper. Sure. At least I'd say bare minimum. Outline it all now while it's fresh in your mind, while you're passionate about it, at least get something down. And then yes, send that baby out into the world to go be what it's going to become. While again, you start working on the next one with your thing on the side.
With your thing on the side. I like it. Hopefully that has told you what to do with the poop.
All right, ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Hi. First of all, thank you for sharing your incredible insights and for reigniting my desire to read and write again. You have armed me with the tools I need to hopefully finish a shitty novel someday.
Hooray.
I've been binging your show and learning how just much stuff I've been doing wrong, including the occasional pantsing. I am 6 episodes away from being caught up and am now comfortable enough to ask 2 questions. One. I have a trunk novel that I trunked because I am concerned that I was doing a racism. The main character is a former police detective from 1860s New York and is confronted with some of the terrible actions of both protesters, law enforcement, and military during the draft riots, which greatly informs his way of interacting with other people and authority. But I realized I was using marginalized people's struggles to make a point about my character. And being a white Scandinavian, this probably is not my story to tell. Should the novel stay in the trunk? I probably know the answer. We'll do this one first.
I mean, if you feel like it's iffy, it's iffy.
Yeah,
you know. Let me give you a different. Let me tell you an example that is personally my own story. It's a screenplay I was working on that I'd outlined and everything, and never completely wrote. But started in, you know, the 2000s. I mean, I say it's been a couple of years, but if I think about it, it's probably been 10 or 15. And, you know, spoiler alert, it is a story about a woman who is being abused, who tries to kill her abuser. But it turns out he's not dead and he comes back after her, and it's like a monster in the house type thing. And the big twist ending was she gets away from him at the end, but the big twist ending was the fact that she's actually been dead the entire time, and the way she got away from him was she took her own life, and that was her ultimate escape. And in the early 2000s, that was super legit.
Mm.
fast forward to the media and some other things that have happened since in my own evolution. This isn't just like cancel culture. Like, won't let me count my time. You know what I mean? But my evolution of my perception of all of this is like, yeah, not right now. That's not the thing. So if something is telling you it's not the thing, it's not the thing. It's not the thing. And I don't mean in the sense that no person who is not a part of a given community can talk about that community, because I don't believe that. Things can be approached with respect. They can be approached with tact. They can be approached, especially talking to people in those communities, because sometimes your white Scandinavian-ishness gives you access to be able to tell some stories that other people can't get out there.
Mm.
So I never really accept the, like, if I'm not like them, I can't talk about them thing. What you don't want to do is make The Last Samurai and whitewash stuff.
Mm.
But I pretty much stand by, if even you are like, then yeah, keep it in the trunk.
All right, the second half of this. I have always been interested in story in video games and other interactive fiction like TTRPGs, but I have such a hard time figuring out how to utilize stuff like foreshadowing when the players might choose to never pick up Chekhov's gun. I know B-Dave says that all stories have the same bits, but are there unique bones to interactive fiction I should keep in mind when outlining interactive fiction? If you need, you can split the questions up, good because I did, or only answer one or none. All the best to the gorgeous gang, Morton Leonard.
I'm going to let you guys go for that one first, because I just gobbled up so much about the other one.
So, I mean, the thing with Chekhov's gun, that, like, and I'll say this from TTRPGs first, is like, one of the things about it is it's because the camera points at it, or the narrative discusses it at length.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do too as a DM. Like, it doesn't mean that they have to interact with it. You just have to have it there and mention it, and you can even say that there's something about it, but that's all you really need to do as far as like foreshadowing. It doesn't have to be with it doesn't have to be the player initiative to do that in order for you to have the foreshadowing for the story that you're telling. There are some things that I think are fun to do in that way, but those are all just kind of like little fun things. Like, there's a, in the D&D adventure Descent into Avernus, there is a church that the players can find themselves in at one point. And in the book, it is like, hey, if they pray to this specific god in front of this specific window for like 2 minutes, they get a +1 sword. Like, a beam of light shows up and a +1 sword comes to them. And there's it does not tell you in any way, shape, or form how to convey that clue to the players. That's just like, hey, you know what, if you have a character who's devout to this god and they do something there, they get something a little cool for it. But when it comes to something that is important for the plot, something that is important to the story that you're telling, you as the DM are the one directing the camera, like where that is pointing. Point it to the thing, and just as long as you have acknowledged it there and said that, you know, pointed it out a bit, that's all you kind of really need to do. Unless, you know, if you're like, oh, well, I hope they pick up. Yeah, juice it up a little bit. It's like, it's got a little shine to it, a little shine that doesn't seem quite natural to it. Like, you know, just you can do things to make them want to pick up the item. I almost said pick up Chekhov's gun. I didn't like that one.
Not that, you know.
I want the one shot that's just called Chekhov's gun, and there's just a gun, and that's it. And it's like, everybody just has to figure out what is this going to end up doing, and then the stress of it makes somebody do something crazy.
Betty, I want a video game called Chekhov's gun, but it's like the game I Am Bread, where you are just the gun, and you just move around.
I've never heard of that, and I need to look it up. I feel like I'm the baby in this group for this question, but I feel like there's a part here where when you offer it up to the players, when you say, and there is a gun on the mantle, like they know you don't say things. I mean, I don't know. I hate when the DM points out details and then the details turn out to be irrelevant. And as
Yeah.
a DM, I kick myself when I describe things and I get all like novel descriptive. And then people are like, oh, she mentioned a gun. We should look at the gun. I'm like, fuck, then the gun wasn't supposed to do anything. But that's it. Like you've set up the intention that this is an object that can be added to the narrative. And when you get into things where like this must be added to the narrative, that's a tricky space because you need ways for them to not do that, right? If they are like, I don't touch guns, I'm a pacifist, you need a way around it, right?
Well, like one of the things that, like, you could do with it, where it's like, I'm gonna go with Chekhov's sword here for D&D.
Okay, fair.
Like, and it doesn't, again, it doesn't have to be necessarily that they pick it up and interact with it. You could say, you enter a room and there's a wall of weaponry hanging above the fireplace. Above the mantle is a ornate sword that stands out from the rest, a ruby in the pommel of the hilt. And that's it. That sword, that's an important sword for later. You have pointed it out, you have done something with it.
Yes. And this is like entangled with a problem I like to call let's just go be pirates, which is not as widespread as it is in my head, which is that I am always afraid when I DM that the players are gonna go, fuck it, let's just go be pirates. And I'm like, no, I need you to engage with the game. But the reality is they mostly do. So I've never had people say, fuck it, let's go be pirates. I have had people say, fuck all those options, I want to go hire a diviner to do things, but that's different. Okay, B Dave, now is the time for your expert opinion.
Well, I've heard of people kind of have the fear of the, like, fuck it, let's go be pirates, to which I say, yeah, they might, that's what makes this not video games, to which I would say, if they're like, fuck it, let's go be pirates, you got one of two things you can do. We keep coming back to these, these branching paths, the illusions of binary choice. The first one is yes and them. If that's what they want to do, if they want to board the nearest ship and get the hell out of here, okay, they didn't take the hook. So they can run into the exact same problem somewhere down the line,
Yeah, now your big bad guy has an eye patch.
exactly. Nothing is ever wasted, I would advise reskinning it like that more than have them force back, because you can go straight Book of Job, where the ship sinks and they're forced back to shore and they must engage with this. And unless it's kind of like a horror type thing, like you're stuck in the mist and you physically can't go, and then that can be part of the selling point, because nobody ever wants to feel railroaded ever. What we've talked about this before. I know you said you were six episodes from finishing. I think we actually talked about it fairly recently. Again, is the illusion of choice. Like, when I write my adventures, I have been blessed to do this for at a fairly high level now. You might have path A, path B, path C, but they all lead to room number one. Then exiting room number one, you may have path D, E, and F. But they're definitely gonna go to room two, right? And when you're talking specifically about high magic things like D&D and things like that, if they don't engage with the sword, you can have them wake up one day and the sword's under their pillow because reasons, you know?
Oh, I did that once with a dummy. It was great.
I was watching Rising of the Shield Hero, which is an anime I highly recommend. Although the second season lags a little bit. And literally, there's a sword, the mild spoiler alert, you won't know this till it happens. There's a sword in the stone type thing, where somebody who draws the blade will be the rightful king type thing. And the villain is trying to grab it, and the magic sword literally disappears and appears in the hero's hand. They don't do anything. You know what I mean? And like, you can, once you introduce magic, all bets are off. Like, guess what, buddy? You're king,
Well, I do want to go back to the thing that he was the listener was talking about, because you were so good at this with Black Dice Society, which is foreshadowing. how do you suggest folks do foreshadowing in their D&D game? You all are missing the most incredible motions of B-Dave.
You didn't see me being flattered here, because Trevor was the hunkiest podcast engineer for that. So he had
heard all of it
in greater detail than most. A big part of that was planning, you know, And again, what I knew for those things is I'd know things like, I mean, now I had the deal with the fact of a season framework, so I kind of had to know roughly where are they going and roughly how long are they going to stay there, because this is how much time I've got. The timing did not always work out like I hoped. In fact, it usually didn't. But
D&D? What?
Yeah, I know. It's wild to say.
This is my shocked face.
But if I knew they were in Barovia, in the next place they were going was the carnival, then it was easy for me to start mentioning a carnival, because that's just what I knew was going to happen next. If I knew that somebody was secretly the bad guy, I will say I was incredibly proud, though, that I planted seeds in the first episode that paid off in episode 30.
That's awesome.
Episode 30. And people were like, what? How did you? And I'm like, it was all right in your face. I'm like, if you go back and you watch it, I'm telling you the entire time.
I love that.
Everything I was telling you the entire time. So yeah, but that's you know, that's one of the advantages of having like planned ahead a little bit. Somebody mentioned earlier that they'd committed the sin of pantsing. Yes, I'm very anti-pants, so much so I'm not wearing any right now. But again, it's whatever it takes to get it done. I always want to come back to that. Outlining is not everybody's jam. Some people really struggle with it. If that is sapping the joy out of it and you can sit down and just bang on the keyboard until words come out, do that. You know, I'm talking in a greater strategic sense. You will have a superior product. It's like if your options are build a house according to a blueprint, or it's snowing and I'm going to freeze to death and I have to figure out how to build a lean-to now, you know, then build the lean-to. I think it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah.
All right. I think we got time for one more question.
Okay, good. Because I have one more question.
Hey.
To the three tangenteers. Hello, I just wanted to start off by letting you wonderful people know just how much I look forward to listening to your podcast. Aww. It's helped me out in my writing journey so much that I've recommended it to a fellow fantasy writer and have made serious progress in the first fantasy novel I'm working on, as well as finished the first draft of a short story set in the same universe. On the topic of my novel, I'm having a few friends and my sister read it and offer suggestions, and it's going great. However, they've pointed out a few reoccurring details that I'd like your advice on. The first is that rather than info dumping, I give the reader as much new information as the main character gets throughout the story, as it's told from the perspective of the main character, who is also new to the magic system and doesn't know its lore/history. I like writing this way, as I feel that it seems more realistic, but I'd like to know what you all think about that. The second, should I read the second part or should we just do that one first?
Let's do the first one first.
Okay.
I will say, yeah, if it is a character who is unfamiliar with this stuff and they're learning at the same time I'm learning, I love that. I love that stuff. That's some of my favorite. In fact, I will go as far as to say that the extreme opposite of it irritates the crap out of me, where like the character 100% knows about this and they just pass over it and don't give me a damn explanation. Like, I suddenly no longer feel like a reader. I feel like the guy just standing with the group of friends and going, is this just an inside joke? Is it? No, I don't get to know. Like, there's one part. There's one part in The Wheel of Time, and it's been years since I've read this one, that I genuinely remember irritating me with this, where some characters are talking and someone's just like, oh yeah, no, you know, we haven't seen that since the tree is capitalized. And it was just like, oh yeah, Matt's like, oh yeah, yeah, the tree. Matt thought about the tree. And that's it. That's all it fucking gives me. And I texted my friend that told me to read this book. I'm like, the fuck is the tree? But when it comes to a character that is learning with it, yeah, I and not having as many info dumps next to each other, I think really helps with that, because you do feel like you are learning with the character as they are learning what is going on in it.
Yeah, I would definitely space out your info dumps. But I know one thing that bothers me a lot, which also this happens a lot in Rising of the Shield Hero, is when there's vital exposition that you don't give just because you don't want to say it at the time in the story, and not that it makes sense narratively. Like, if right now I'm like, you guys, I went to the doctor today and it's not good. And you're like, what happened? And I'm like, the tests are positive. And you're like, tests for what? And I'm like, I gotta go. We'll talk. Like, what? You know,
this like is just an example, and I still have this flush of panic and anger. Yeah. Like, no, you don't get to leave us like that.
Right, exactly. As I've lamented George R. R. Martin used to do before his untimely death. Remember something important too. In Doctor Who, the show's not about the doctor. The show's about the companion, because the companion is you.
Yeah.
The companion is the person that walks into the room and is like, why can that dog talk? Because the doctor already knows, you know? Or in rare circumstances, the doctor's going to be like, I don't know. Let's figure it out, right? But, you know, but that's why you have the fish out of water character so often. The person that's just not from the situation.
Yeah.
They're new to town. They're new to the world. They're new to the company, because you need someone to be able to say, wait a second, why is this like this?
Yeah.
You know, or at least maybe through their internal voice, you get them trying to deduce and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I'm puzzled by this because this is such a classic way to get across your world building that I'm wondering what the notes specifically were.
Mm.
And so I wonder if it's that, you know, are you like kind of stopping the story to give a magic lesson, and that's what's not clicking, that it's a lot of the same type of scene, that the scenes are sort of giving information, because it seems weird to me that they're like, you're showing a lot of the world building through scenes and actions, because that seems great.
Yeah.
So that is my question, is there something behind the note that might clarify what's the issue here? But I completely agree with B. Dave and Trevor. Like, this seems like a good way to go about it.
I mean,
okay.
I will just add to this. But if multiple people have told you it's too much, it's too much. You know, like, I'm full stop.
Yeah, which is like, but what is too much about it? Is the part I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe ask those people.
Wine too fast.
No, you're good.
Like, what's up?
Yeah,
that's, I mean, true. Ask them. That's a good point, right? Like, I did this today. I had a chapter. I'm like, I feel like something's off about it. Rhiannon read it for me. She gave me some notes about, like, sort of the narrative distance was bouncing around. So there was one note in there where, because she's reading the scene separate from the rest of the book, she's like, this seems weird that this is happening now. And I'm like, I'm not disagreeing with you, because I also wish it could happen not now, but here's why it is. Do you think if I added this kind of line, it would fix? And she's like, oh yeah, that's what I meant, was just like, clarify, why is this happening now instead of 3 days ago when we had all the time in the world to have this conversation? And so that's a good point. Like, if you're getting this note and you're like, this note doesn't make sense, it's a good idea to go say, okay, cool. Tell me more. What's going on? What are you pointing at? And hopefully they'll be able to tell you, because that is, I love having readers who know how to analyze text and tell you what exactly is twigging them versus the, I don't know, it just feels weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, all right, there's a second part. The second is that my sister insists that I throw in some romance. I'd love to, but the main character is involved in the war, even if she isn't the one fighting on the front lines. I get that this is fantasy, but I feel that some details should be a bit more realistic. Would it make sense for the main character to fall deeply in love with the young nobleman while in the middle of all this planning and tension? Or would it be better for her to slowly but surely take more and more notice of her love interest through his actions? I don't know if This is helpful to know, but the main character is 15 years old, is a princess, but was raised as a commoner and possesses the power that was once feared, but is now needed to save the people. Thank you so much, Shalina.
I can tell by the way you asked that question. No, don't
no,
include the romance.
Yeah, don't do it.
No,
yeah.
You don't need
in
it.
In fact, I'll respect you more.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I wonder if there's two possibilities here. One is your sister likes romance and she's like, I would like some romance.
Yeah.
And that's a personal opinion. You don't have to listen to those. The other possibility is that your character's lacking some kind of personal investment. She's just got her eyes on like these big picture things, like saving the whole ass country or people. Then, you know, maybe she needs something that's a little closer to home, which a romance can fill that space. And I would say it is absolutely reasonable to fall in love while under stress. People do it all the time. Mm-hmm. In fact, arguably, they're more prone to it. You're about to die. You release hormones that make you think you're in love with people. This has been proven by science.
Huh.
But, oh yeah.
That was speed. That's the entire premise of speed.
Oh my God. What a reference to pull out for that. That is incredible.
Literally,
that's
speed,
better than I was like, I was gonna be all like, I read this paper and they did this thing, but no.
It was like, watch the movie Speed.
That's,
perfect
that
illustration.
Is correct. Yes, yes, that kind of like, oh shit, I might die. Adrenaline makes you think you're falling in love with people.
It had nothing to do with the fact that it was Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
It's why they called it life affirming sex. Yep.
And also, I don't know if you remember being 15, but for a lot of 15-year-olds, your emotions are very volatile and you develop big feelings for people because you need to stick to something.
I got one in the house. Believe me, it is a pendulum swing. Yep.
So if the reason you're like, I don't know if I should do this is all about the logic of it, then no, don't worry about it. It makes sense. If the reason, which it feels like I super agree with you guys, is I don't wanna, then don't.
Yeah.
Don't write something you really don't want to write because it's just not going to be great. Especially a romance. A tepid romance is not a good thing. Like, don't do an obligatory romance.
And I feel like
it's
readers can tell when, like, it's added in.
Oh, you like, can super tell when someone's like, here's the romance that is required of my fantasy novel.
The one movie that I specifically remember about this was Pacific Rim. It got about, like, 75% of the way through that movie, and I paused it, and I turned to my wife. I went, if those two fucking kiss at the end of this movie, I'm gonna flip a fucking table.
Well, but they had to drift together.
But they That's the thing. They don't kiss. There is no romantic relationship in that movie because they didn't set it up at all, and it was great. I was happy about it.
I haven't seen that movie, and I can't think of the last movie that I had this feeling, but I have it. I know I've had it, where I'm just like, they're going to do a proximity romance.
Yeah.
Here are two people who are attractive and next to each other. Of course they want to fuck. And I'm just like, I'm not here for this.
No.
This is not what it came for.
I'm not against romance.
I'd watch a porno.
I'm not against romance at all. It is great. It is one of my favorite genres to watch. But
read
like,
about your fair share of Minotaur milking. We know.
God fucking damn it! But when it's a situation like this,
we should do a book club and read this.
God
book.
Damn it!
Maybe
join the
man.
Discord. Maybe we'll do a book club.
Y'all know how I feel about this, but I would actually read the Minotaur milking book if only to be horrified. Sorry, you were making a point. Sorry,
but yeah, Kevin. No, it's just yeah. If it is what it was like, this was proximity. This is not what the story is about. It just happened to be two people of the opposite sex that was within 15 feet of each other. Yeah, you don't need to do it. You don't need to do it.
I mean, feel free to turn the expectation on its head. Have somebody lean in for the kiss and have her be like, "We're in the middle of a war." Like,
like I love that. She's like, no, I don't have time.
I'm not here to kiss. I'm here to fucking win a war.
Exactly. Not here to fuck. I'm here to fuck up.
God damn it. I love it. I love it.
And tell your sister to read the Minotaur Milking book. Maybe she'd enjoy it.
I mean, based on that one influencer that keeps talking about it, it's apparently pretty satisfying.
I am so
satisfying the words you really want to go with on that one.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm
that
I'm
is
gonna
the
I'm,
impression. That is the
I'm...
impression given by the videos that B-Dave keeps sending me, that she found it surprisingly satisfying.
It's called Wait. I just found the cover.
Oh, you had never seen the cover? Oh yeah, it's
it is called Morning Glory Milking, Cambic Creek. Yeah.
Okay. Tell you what. I'm looking at our Discord right now, and in the roles and tags, there's a little writing about dragons and shit emote that you click on so you get the tangerino. It's at 45 right now. If that goes up to 100, we'll seriously consider.
Done.
We'll talk about doing a book club for this fucking Minotaur book.
I love it.
Oh my god. Oh, there's an Audible for it.
No, there's fucking not.
Oh wow.
It's 4.5 stars with 91 reviews. Almost 10,000 sad, lonely people.
Okay. Okay, no, yeah. No, I'm genuinely so curious. Because that's the other thing is it's like, people are like, what was the video you sent me? She was like, you know, the actual Minotaur milking is very clinical.
Yeah, no.
The romance is actually very sweet and slow burn.
Let me just say, I apologize for calling these people sad and lonely. You don't have to be sad and lonely to like this kind of thing. Let me stop right there. That's not true. So I'm not kink shaming. I'm kink questioning. I'm kink asking why. I love the fact that it's 4.5 stars with 10,000 ratings on Amazon, but 3.8 on Goodreads with 25,000 ratings.
Holy shit.
And I'm not going to do it right now. I'll save this content for when we get to it, but I need to read the 1-star Goodreads reviews.
Oh, that'll be in the discussion. And the fact that you can get this book in paperback, that's incredible.
Okay. You guys. Wait. Violet is a typical down on her luck millennial, mid-20s, overeducated and drowning in debt, on the verge of moving into her parents' basement, when a lifeline appears in the form of a very unconventional job in neighboring Cambric Creek. She has no choice but to grab at it with both hands. Morning Glory Milking Farm offers full-time hours, full benefits, and generous pay with no experience needed. There's only one catch. The clientele is grade A certified prime beef with the manly, meaty endowments to match. Milking minotaurs isn't something Violet ever considered as a career option, but she's determined to turn the opportunity into a reversal of fortune. When a stern, deep-voiced client begins to specially request her for his milking sessions, maintaining her professionalism and keeping him out of her dreams is easier said than done. Violet is resolved to make a dent in her student loans and afford name-brand orange juice, and a one-sided crush on an out-of-her-league minotaur is not part of her plan, unless her feelings aren't so one-sided after all.
One thing I find super delightful about this is that clearly this is the first you guys have been exposed to this area.
It's not for me.
I love watching B-Dave on this journey.
But why is she a mid-20s millennial drowning in student debt in a fantasy world?
Do you know how fucking relatable that is?
Because it's relatable.
Do you know how fucking relatable that is?
It's just someone that the reader can sort of imagine themselves in the place of, in a way. And also, there's a question you have to answer. Why would you work at a minotaur milking clinic?
You guys.
What leads you there?
You guys.
Oh, I got to pay my student loans.
Yeah.
You guys, it's book 1 of 4.
Yeah. No, this. So first one is Minotaur. Second one is Mothman. Third one is Werewolf. Fourth one is a shadow.
Okay. We gotta start wrapping up the show.
Come on, guys. Get us to 100. Yeah. This one does. This one. Okay. Let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Remember Trevor's promise. You get to 100 tangerinos on the Dungeon Scrawlers Discord. We'll do a book club.
I said we will seriously consider.
No, we'll do it. We're in. We'll do it.
No, you can't cheap out like that. You can't tell. Right, you can't dangle the carrot and not give it to people. That's
We'll do
what
it.
they teach you first day in Minotaur milking clinic.
All
right, friends, where can people find you? What awesome things are you working on?
Apparently, I'm cracking myself up. Twitter and Blue Sky at Aaron M. Evans. you can join me on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers every Monday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific for concentration check. Come get some writing done with me and special guests for the rest of March and April. Next week is Shauna Germain, and the week after that, B. Dave Walters will be.
Hey, I know that guy.
To get some Pomodoro sprints done. You can pick up my book, Empire of Exiles, which has a sad lack of Minotaur milking, but very twisty mystery. At bookstores everywhere. That one's out. I can't add anything to that. And
that
then
is
the
true.
Sequel, Relics of Ruin, is available for pre-order. Comes out at the end of April. So please, please, please do that. I would appreciate it very much. And if I sell a million copies, I will put a Minotaur milking scene into the third book.
Oh my God.
That's just valid.
I love it.
I do. B. Dave Walters, I have several additional questions now. You know, that
I'm not sure where the Minotaurs come from. I'm not sure why they need to be milked. But if I sell a million copies, I will figure it out.
It's a wide world, and they just, you roll over to kids. You know why? Pay off your student loan debts, clearly.
Of course, the classic reason.
You know, it's I mean, I'm just gonna spend the rest of the day like staring at the ceiling, being like, am I the milker or the Minotaur? That's, yeah,
you're a switch. It's fine.
Oh, Jesus Christ,
Aaron, god damn it,
Minotaur switch, adding that to the Twitter bio.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry, knock it off, guys.
That's, you know, for whoever out there, this was your first time listening, welcome aboard.
Welcome to writing about dragons and
welcome
shit.
Yeah, check out my website, theundisputedacademy.com, and I'm gonna stop saying words now.
Yeah, you can find me on socials at the Trevor. There's day hiding in there. I haven't posted anything nearly as funny as the last 10 minutes. I think that's a good place to wrap things up. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoy this episode, the best way to support is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you have any questions, like the lovely people that wrote in tonight, you can send those into writingaboutdragonsshit@gmail.com, or send in questions and keep up to date on the show on the Dungeon Scrawlers Discord, and there's a link in the description below to join that. Aaron is typing in the Discord right now. Are you telling them
I was just telling them that it got wacky.
Okay. I thought you were starting. Now you're just like, tell your friends, get that number up to 100.
I am going to say that. I just thought it was better etiquette to wait for the show to come out.
That's fair.
You know,
I'm going to do it as soon as we're done because you told me not to.
You know, I was going to do.
I'm feeling feisty tonight, apparently.
It's all the Minotaur milking. I was going to say. I was going to button this on at the end as one of my like you standard fade out things, but it like takes a few more words. This gives a whole new meaning to the obligatory scene of like the overworked career girl running through the streets carrying a tray of something. Hey. He breaks the hill and spills it all.
All right, go write about some drags of shit and then guess some Minotaurs.